Welcome to Crimes, Killers, Cults,
and Beer.
And beer.
Yes, sir.
Just two crazy Florida men drinking beer and talking about true crime. Because why the hell not?
Why the hell not?
Why the hell not? Anyway, that's Todd.
And that's Bill.
And what are you drinking tonight?
I am drinking rum and coke out of my powder blue sippy cup.
I am drinking Bud Light out of my brown bottle with a royal blue label.
Yes, you are, as always.
So, do you have any ado?
I do not.
I do have ado.
Yes, I might have some ado in a couple more episodes, but I don't right now.
What could that be? Do I already know?
It's possible. It is what it is, and it'll be what it'll be. It just might take a few weeks, that's all.
Okay, so I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, okay. I think so.
Okay. Well, my ado is I'm writing a book.
Yay!
Yep. I am, and if you're curious to know what I'm writing the book about, episode 50. It's the Dust Bowl Killer, Thaddeus Morton.
Yes.
I'm writing a book about that crime story. And so, I mean, everybody that reached out to me and, you know, and gave me their opinion on that episode told me, it's like, dude, you really need to write a book about that.
Including me.
Yeah.
Probably so, the first one that told you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You told me on the episode that I needed to do it. So I'm doing it. I've got two chapters written, and who knows how long it's going to take me to write it. But yeah, I'm actually pumped and excited to write it. So,
hell yeah.
So hopefully, you know, I'll join the long list of podcasters that have published books. Including like Morbid and Last Podcast on the Left, and
yeah,
I'm sure there's others, but
yeah, we had one on Vic.
Yeah, well, he's not a podcaster though. He does interviews.
Oh yeah, that's right. He's not a podcaster.
Right.
I forgot about that. I don't know the way he has that set up, so I figured you.
Well, he does a lot of interviews.
Just because he's like a guest on a podcast, I guess. Like, yeah, you know, he's a guest. I could make him a podcaster.
Yeah.
If he's looking on a guest work. Anyway, not the point.
A perennial guest. So, but yeah, we're excited about that book.
And yes.
Should I name one of the victims Todd?
Why not? Dude, that's what a lot of authors do. Like, a lot of the characters are based on their friends and stuff. Why not?
Sure. I mean, I could change. Which one do you want to be? Do you want to be the sheriff or do you want to be the doctor?
Oh.
Or do you want to be the hardware store owner?
Oh, let me be the hardware store owner. That would be fun.
All right. Changing.
You know, I'm not going to do anything, but that would be fun.
I'm gonna change the hardware store owner's name to Todd. Wait, did that name exist back in the 30s?
I'm sure. I don't know. I'll Google it later. Or you can Google it later. And if it didn't, I'm sure it did. It may not have been a popular name, but.
Right.
Anyway, I don't know. Find out if it, you know, if it works, it works. If it don't, then don't do it.
Right.
I'm flexible.
So, tonight we're covering the Toolbox Killers.
Did you say who your mentor for the book was?
Oh yeah. No, I didn't. I forgot. He called me up last night after I had messaged him telling him I had started the book. He was one of the people that told me to that I should write it. And he was DL Sirius, our guest on, I think it was episode 51. Let's throw back to episode 3. And what an awesome episode that was. That was a lot of fun.
Yes, it was.
But he has 4 published books under his belt, and he told me that he's like, I'll help you, but one thing I won't help you on is the writing. You don't need any help with that.
Yeah,
I'm exactly. I'm like, thank you. that was a really nice thing to say.
Yeah, it was. Well, dude, he knows. Mm-hmm. You know, he knows talent when he sees it. It's all good.
Tonight we're covering Lawrence Bittaker and Roy Norse, the Toolbox Killers.
Yes.
The scumbags that they were. Freaking Satan's minions.
Satan's minions.
Although I think Gertrude Banaswecki would make even these guys flinch.
Yeah, probably.
So, Lawrence Bittaker was born September 27th, 1940, and Roy Norris was born February 5th of 1948. They were a serial killer duo who terrorized Southern California for over 5 months in 1979. They tortured, raped, and murdered 5+ teenage girls during that time. And this is one of the more disturbing cases that there are due to the sheer depravity of their MO. They would kidnap their victims and torture them using things like pliers, ice picks, hammers, and wires, among other things.
Oh, my.
Yeah. The weapons were stored in Bittaker's toolbox, which he kept in the back of his rolling dungeon, a white Chevy van outfitted specifically for this.
Isn't it always?
You know, at least it's not a camper van. At least it's not a camper van.
Yeah, right. It's not a camper van.
So, sources for this are Wiki, a documentary, Wicked Attraction, season 2, episode 6, The Toolbox Killers. And the bulk of their backstories I got from Wiki, because they had a lot more information than I could find anywhere else.
Oh, all right.
So go Wiki.
Yeah, go Wiki. We love Wiki.
Yep. I use it for some things and not for others. So, Lawrence Bittaker was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We're going to Pennsylvania 2 weeks in a row.
Hey. That's a first.
Yeah. He was the unwanted child of parents who had chosen not to have children. And they apparently chose not to use birth control either.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, you know, if you don't like kids, you need to do something about it.
Yeah.
You're still going to have sex. I mean, geez.
Yeah. I mean,
it's crazy. Why would you do something like that?
Seems like I had more sex before I had my vasectomy.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, but he was put in an orphanage at birth and was adopted by a Mr. George Bittaker and his wife. His adoptive father worked in the aviation industry, which caused them to have to move around the country a lot. He got to go where the work is. Yeah. And Lawrence was arrested for shoplifting at age 12, and he continued to commit minor crimes and get caught through his teenage years, and this landed him in juvie. And he would later say that these crimes were ways to get back at society because of the lack of love for mommy and daddy.
Oh, no.
One of those.
All right.
He had an IQ of, take a guess.
Oh, God.
I'm not looking for an exact number. Just low or high or middle or average, what?
Average?
138.
138? Holy crap, that's borderline genius.
Yes. But he dropped out of high school and went on another crime spree.
Oh. Jeez, dude, my IQ is 136. Well, I never did none of that.
Damn. I wonder if I was.
But I guess my parents wanted me, so it makes a difference, I suppose.
Yeah. Your mom was awesome.
Yes, she loved her. I miss her so much.
I do too. I miss my parents too. But in one of his prison stays, he was given a test to see if he could actually be an inmate prison guard.
Oh.
And he scored much higher than anybody had ever scored in the history of the test.
Oh, okay.
Like not just a little, not just the highest score, much higher. Like almost perfect.
Oh, right on. Well, good for him.
So his parents had moved to California by this time, and he was arrested for car theft and a hit and run and evading arrest. And he was imprisoned at the California Youth Authority for white boys until he turned 18.
You had to put that in there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
Anyway.
Pee-wee Gaskins episode. Yeah. Which is still one of our best ones.
That was a fun one too.
Yeah, it was. Hopefully this one will turn out to be like that, because you got to really make light, you know, you need a bit of levity when you're dealing with all this depravity.
Yeah, no shit.
So there's a lot of depravity in this one.
Depravity.
When he was released, he found out that his parents had disowned him and moved to another state, and they didn't tell him or anybody else where they went.
Wait, what? They just took off?
They just took off. Just like, no forwarding address.
They left him behind too?
They left him behind. He would never see them again.
Wow. Dude, that's harsh. Holy crap.
Yeah, but I mean, look at what he was doing. I mean, he was.
Yeah, I mean, you have a point there, yeah.
He was 18. He was 18. You know.
Oh, he was 18. Okay. That's
yeah.
All right, then. That's not as harsh as it sounded.
But it's still pretty harsh, though.
Yeah, that's bad. But yeah, I mean, he's 18. He can take care of himself, or at least he's supposed to be able to.
Right. Almost immediately after being released, he was arrested for transporting a vehicle across state lines, and that got him 18 months at the Oklahoma Reformatory, but he was later transferred to the Medical Center for Federal Inmates in Springfield, Missouri. And that's where...
White boys, right?
Yeah. That's where Larry Hall was imprisoned and where James Keen was sent to get a confession, episode 26.
Yes.
Which, strangely, is our most downloaded episode by far.
I know.
I don't understand it.
Yeah. But hey, it is what it is.
I wish everybody that listened to that episode would listen to all the other episodes. Yeah, it's just crazy. It's just like it's not even close. The second most listened to one has half the amount of listens as the Larry Hall episode does, which is crazy.
That just blows my mind. So.
I know. I mean, it wasn't a bad episode, but I probably wouldn't put it in our top 10 either. Maybe top 15.
Yeah, I mean, it's up there, but yeah, dude,
it's just.
I don't. Hey, if that's what they like, that's what they like. Maybe we ought to go back to that. And
I listened to it the other day. Not a bad episode. I know what it was. You broke that case wide open.
Oh, I did. See, it's been so long; I don't even remember.
All the victims are buried in his graveyard.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That's what it is. Everybody knows that Todd Zilla over here
solved the case. Yeah, sure I did. I'm sure I'm not the first person that thought that.
I don't know. I mean, when we did that episode, I listened to like several other episodes, you know, podcast episodes about it and everything. Nobody said that.
Really?
Yeah.
So it was the first one?
Yeah, it blew me out of the water when you said it. I was just like, whoa, holy crap, that's probably it.
Yeah, well, shit, I don't even know why. Yeah, I mean, shit, I barely remember what I did yesterday. I can remember like over half our episodes ago.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just crazy how that one in particular is the one that you know, people listen to the most. And I don't know why. I'm not complaining. I just, why that one? Yeah. You know, I think that there's definitely better episodes to listen to.
Yeah, but I don't know. Whatever. I'm glad you guys like it.
Absolutely. Keep listening. Keep listening to that one. But just listen to the others too.
Yeah.
Because as many people that have listened to that one, there are better episodes that we've done.
Yeah, there are better ones, and there are some worse ones, but yeah.
There are worse ones. Most of the worst ones came out prior to that episode, but yeah.
Yeah, we found our groove. We're going pretty good now.
Yeah. So, but yeah, but he was in that same prison where Larry Hall was imprisoned, and the laundry list of people that were also imprisoned there, like John Gotti and the Birdman of Alcatraz, and, you know, a whole bunch of like notable figures have been in prison at that particular facility. All so right. When he was released from there in 1960, he was arrested a couple months later in LA for a robbery, and he was sentenced to 15 years in prison. So he was labeled by a psychiatrist as being highly manipulative, having considerable concealed hostility, but he was paroled after 3 years.
Yeah, of course. Why not?
In 1964, he had violated parole. We're seeing a pattern here.
I am. I don't know about anybody else, but I definitely am.
While there, he was evaluated again, and he was deemed a borderline psychopath, and he was put on antipsychotic meds, and then released a year later.
Then released a year later. Of course. Why not?
A month later, in July 1967, he was, wait for it.
Oh, I think I know.
Take a guess.
He was arrested again.
Yep, you got it. He was arrested and convicted. Todd got one.
Yeah, and as you all know, if you've listened to any of our episodes, I hardly ever get this shit right.
But he was arrested and convicted of leaving the scene of an accident and theft, and he was sentenced to 5 years, and he was released in April of 1970. And in 1971, burglary, 6 months to 15 years, released after three.
Just why do they keep letting him go?
I don't know. Oh, dude, did you see the news? Somebody today, like the news story came out today. Somebody in Hernando County, that's over there on, you know, West Coast, over near like Brooksville, Silver Springs, or not Silver Spring, Weekiwachi area, sentenced to 30 years for causing a fatality accident because he was texting on I-75.
Really?
30 years. Bravo. Hit that applause button again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I see it all the time. People sitting there, you know, because I'm higher up than everybody because I drive a semi. I look down, and I see just people on their phone. They're not even paying attention to the road and stuff like that. And I see that on the turnpike. I see that on I-75. I see it on I-95 when I'm brave enough to go on an I-95. Right. I-95 in South Florida is hell. But
yeah, it is.
But. Yeah, I-95 up, you know, in your neck of the woods is becoming hell.
Yeah, it's gotten a lot worse, that's for sure. But, you know.
Which means they're going to widen it at some point. That's going to make it even more hell.
Yeah, if it weren't for all the construction going on, it probably wouldn't be too bad.
So they are widening it now?
I don't know, dude. I mean, the last time I was on 95, there's always construction spots on 95, no matter where you are. That's right. Just life.
Yeah. But hashtag, but I digress.
Yes, we digress.
In 1974, his first serious crime took place. He was arrested for assault with intent to murder or attempted murder. I don't know.
Okay.
but maybe assault with intent to murder is a lesser charge than attempted murder, so they can release him again.
Okay. I have no idea, but that sounds good to me.
But he was at a grocery store where he had stolen a steak, and an employee confronted him about it.
Oh, all right.
Grogu just took a swan dive off of my monitor.
Yeah, I saw that. He just totally just said, "Hey, I'm done being in your video. I'm out of here."
I was depressing him with the story, and it hasn't really gotten started yet.
Grogu said, "Like, why do they keep letting this asshole go? I'm out of here."
Yeah, right.
I'm gone.
Stay put, Grogu. So yeah, he had stolen a steak, and an employee confronted him about it. And Bittaker just stabbed the guy in the chest, and he barely missed the guy's heart. And he tried to bolt, but he was caught by a couple other employees. And they held him until the police got there. Shit like that happens today. I mean, they tell, like, my ex-wife was in retail, and she would always tell me it's just like how they are not even, just let them go.
Yeah, just let them go. It's not worth your life.
Right.
Dude, I was told that when I worked at a gas station, like all those years ago. God, I don't even want to admit how many years ago that was, but.
The guy survived, and his charge was reduced to assault with a deadly weapon.
Oh.
So Bittaker was then sent to California Men's Colony in San Luis Obispo. Yeah.
That is what it is.
Now we're going to switch to good old Roy. Anyway, Roy Norris was born in Greeley, Colorado. But his parents weren't married, but they got married before he was born for appearances' sake.
Okay.
His father worked in a scrapyard. His mother was a stay-at-home druggie. Through his childhood and teenage years, he was in juvie more than he was at home. He also claimed that he was neglected and never did anything wrong. It was all false accusations against him, just much like Lawrence Bittaker. He also bounced around to foster care families, and he claimed that he was sexually abused by a Hispanic family that he was staying with. This, according to Roy, is what started his racism toward Latino people.
Oh. Yeah, sure.
I mean, if true, that'll do it, but I don't believe a word this guy says. I mean, I'm not saying that factor. Yeah. This is fucked up. When he was 16, he visited a female relative who was in her early 20s. And he started sexually harassing her, and she told him to leave, and she told his father, who threatened to beat him. So he stole his father's car and drove it into the mountains where he attempted suicide. This is allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah.
Yeah. He could have just hit on the relative again, and his father would have killed him.
Yeah.
But he allegedly injected pure air into an artery in his arm.
Okay.
And the reason that I say that I don't believe this is because if you do that, you gone.
Yeah. Yeah, when that air bubble gets to your heart or your brain, you're done.
Yep. So it didn't work, and he was picked up as a runaway. And when he was brought back home, his parents told him that he and his sister were unwanted and that they were going to divorce when he and his sister turned 18. I wonder if he and Lawrence were actually brothers born to the same parents. That's a the hell of a coincidence already, but can you imagine throwing that in? It's like,
yeah, right.
I wonder if somebody actually did DNA on these two to see if they were related.
Probably not, but
yeah, probably not, but still.
You never know.
I just thought it was really fun. I just thought it was really funny because of the fact that, both of their parents said that they didn't want them.
God.
Daddy wasn't there to take me to the fair. Roy then dropped out of school and joined the Navy, and he was medically discharged, but while in the Navy, he was diagnosed with a schizoid personality disorder, which prompted the discharge after a sexual assault. Which prompted the discharge after a sexual assault charge.
Okay.
Those always happen in like threes.
Yeah.
I say it, I fuck it up. I say it again, actually fours. I say it, I fuck it up. I say it again, I fuck it up. I say it again, hit the desk, fuck it up. And then I get it right.
Well, it is what it is.
In November 1969, he was arrested for rape, assault, with an attempt to commit rape. And yeah, he had forced himself into a woman's car and raped her. 3 months later, he tried to get into a woman's home, and she refused, and he tried to break into the house. And she called the police, and Norris was arrested. In May of 1971, on bail, he attacked a female student that he had been stalking, and he hit her in the head with a rock, and then beat her head onto the sidewalk as he had her pinned with his knee in her back. Nice guy.
Yeah.
He was charged with assault with a deadly weapon, and he got 5 years at the Atascadero State Hospital. Holy crap, I think I got that right.
Yeah.
He was classed
for white boys, though.
For white boys.
I won't do it again.
Yeah. Pee Wee Gaskins episode, people.
Yep.
He was classified as a sex offender with a mental disorder. And that first one was the one that got him kicked out of the Navy. But Norris was released in 1975 and was declared by doctors that he was no longer a danger to others. I swear these two were separated at birth. Well, no, because Lawrence is 8 years older. But 3 months later, Norris tried to get a 27-year-old girl to go on a ride with him on the back of his motorcycle. And she said no, and he grabbed her scarf and dragged her in some bushes and raped her. And this was in broad daylight.
Wow. That's pretty brazen.
Yeah. She had reported the rape to the police, and she had gotten Norris's license plate number off of the motorcycle. And a month later, police spotted it, and Norris was arrested. He was then sent to the California Men's Colony in San Luis Obispo, which is where Norris and Bittaker met and became friends.
Oh, all right.
Now, at this point, I'm asking this for a reason because the dynamic changes later in the episode. At this point, who's the more violent of the two?
The first guy.
No.
I would think. I don't know. The second guy?
Yeah. The first guy, Lawrence Bittaker, only has one, like, assault charge on him where he tried to kill the guy
in the chest.
Yeah, he stabbed him in the chest, but how many rapes is, and assaults and everything does Norris have at this point?
Oh, I don't know.
A lot.
I don't remember hearing that part. Anyway, not the point.
Bittaker protected Norris and they began to realize that they had something dark in common. They both had a dark passenger. Right. They both shared an interest in raping young girls. And Bittaker had never raped anybody and he wanted to do it. They had planned on meeting once they were both released, and they would kidnap and torture and rape and murder girls ages 13 to 19. They wanted one 13-year-old, one 14, one 15, one 16, one 17, one 18, and one 19. That was they had a game plan.
All right. That's terrible, but okay.
Yeah. So Bittaker is released in late 1978. Norris is released in early 1979. Norris had moved in with Mama in a trailer park, and he got a job as an electrician based on his Navy experience. Right. Bittaker had scored a job as a machinist, at a aircraft manufacturing company. Bittaker was an ex-con, and he was making almost six figures.
Holy crap. Jeez.
So why all this crap? You know, why all this crazy crap?
Why? You're doing good. Just do that.
I mean, there's got to be something in your mind when you're considering doing shit like this. You've got to know that you're going to get caught eventually. You know, unless you're the Zodiac killer.
Right. Oh, dude, like people like me and you, like relatively normal people would think that eventually we're going to get caught if we did something like that. But I think people that are whatever, like prone to do that kind of thing, probably don't think they're going to get caught, or they don't plan on being caught.
Well, look at BTK and the Golden State Killer. Those guys got away with it for years. With BTK, it was his own stupidity, and he just wanted to be – he just wanted people talking about him again.
Yeah.
So he got him – the idiot got himself arrested. Golden State Killer, it wound up being a DNA, like Ancestry.com that brought him in.
Yeah.
Because when you send your DNA to any of those sites and everything, it's immediately run through the database.
Of course it is.
With the FBI. And that's what happened. That's what like his daughter or like granddaughter or something, did one of those on herself and everything. And so when they ran it through, it came up as a match to DNA that had been found at some of his, on some of his victims.
Yeah.
And that's how he was brought in. He's one we're going to cover at some point, but, well, yeah, I'm planning on this podcast lasting for years.
I know, but I'm just saying though, dude, it's like every time we bring somebody up like that, you're like, we plan on doing one about him.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, we're eventually going to do all of it.
We do. Like, I mean, I get it.
Jeffrey Dahmer's going to be episode eventually. 500.
I know. Hey, let's just get to 100 first.
We're not that far away.
I know, but let's get there first and then we'll worry about 500.
So we're going to skip 101 to 499 and just go right to 500? I know. I'm just being stupid. But I do it so well.
Yeah, we both kind of do stupid pretty good sometimes. Yeah. Anyway.
So in February of 1979, they reconnected and decided that it was time to strike. They began putting together a very detailed plan. The plan. Mm-hmm. Step one. They needed a van. A 1977 GMC.
That's always step one.
Yeah. A 1977 GMC cargo van. No windows. With a sliding door on the side, which would be perfect for a quick stretch to get a girl off of the street and go. Bittaker, yeah. Bittaker named the van Murder Mac. And
Murder Mac, okay.
Murder Mac. You know, Mac is a truck, you know, brand of semi. You know, so that was his reasoning. And also, the Hillside Stranglers, they had a van that they had also named. So Bittaker was paying homage. AKA, okay. He was not original.
Yeah, he's just being a copycat.
Yeah. Hillside Stranglers. Step two was to outfit it. They put a bed in the back of the truck with hooks on the top for restraint. They also,
as you would,
yeah, they put a large toolbox in the back under the bed with all of his torture tools and a cooler for beer.
For beer.
For beer.
Well, yeah, you know, after a long day of rape and torture, you need a beer.
Yeah. And you know what? They should have just gone with a kegerator. I mean, they've got all this other shit in there. Why not put a kegerator in there?
Yeah, right? Why not? Oh, boy. Kegerator.
The kegerator.
All right. Yeah, that's good.
The kegerator and the murder back. So step three was shit. Practice runs. From February to June of 1979, they picked up over 20 hitchhikers and did literally nothing with them other than drop them off where they wanted to go. So they were working on their game to get people into the van.
Okay. Yeah.
Bittaker was also in good with young people, mainly because he had drugs and alcohol. And plus, they were very friendly on the surface, and they would take pictures with girls and pretended to be pro photographers with Polaroid cameras.
With Polaroid cameras. Yeah, I'm a pro, but here.
The worst pictures ever made. Polaroid camera. I'm a professional photographer. Look at my Polaroid. They make ads that are like, they're like, professional modeling photographer, instant results.
Instant results. Oh, God. Oh. Yeah.
Obviously, before, I mean, now you actually can get pro results instantly. You just have to look at it on a computer screen, like a laptop or something.
Yes.
But back then, it was just a Polaroid camera.
Just a Polaroid camera. That's all we could afford.
Yeah. But plus, during that time, hitchhiking was normal and considered safe, despite many active serial killers who preyed on them, including the Hillside Stranglers, Kenny Bianchi, and Angelo Buono, Ed Kemper, Patrick Kearney, William Bonin, Randy Kraft, and others. Our buddies, Mental Illness Theater, are doing like a 4 or 5 part episode on Randy Kraft right now as we record this.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I'll have to listen to that.
He's a nasty one. I think they've done parts 1 and 2. But they, you know, with either 2 or 3 parts coming. But it's interesting. I mean, when they do a deep dive, they do it as good as anybody. So, I mean, they do it as good as, you know, like the, like last podcast on the left or something like that. I mean, they're, go listen to Mental Illness Theater.
Yeah, our buddies. We love those guys. They're great. Yes.
So
they have the best name. I always say that, but they do.
I know. Mental Illness Theater. That is the best name for a true crime podcast ever. So, but step 4, they needed a private, out of the way place. So they found a fire access road in the mountains, and Bittaker cut the lock that was on its gate and replaced it with one of his own. So they were set.
I see.
With their test runs down, it was time to take the Murder Mac out for its maiden voyage.
Its maiden voyage.
They got it used. I don't know. I just, that just was funny to me. It's maiden voyage, but they got it. Yeah. They bought it used. It was 2 years old when they got it. They bought it.
So the, I mean, shit, it's a van, dude. It could have been, never mind.
Well, those old American cargo vans would run for forever.
Oh, yeah. You know, back in the day when they made shit to last.
Yeah. So they drove up and down the street searching for their first victim, and they came across 16-year-old Linda Schaefer, Lucinda Schaefer. Her grandmother had dropped her off at a church.
So they're not going to the age order.
Huh?
Well, you said they wanted the 13. I figured they would go in numerical order, but how are they going to know?
I guess go through their. How old are you? I don't know.
Yeah, right.
That was just their plan. Yeah. That was just their plan. It was kind of like a scorecard system for them or whatever. I mean, I don't think they would pick somebody up and be like, how old are you? I'm 15. We already got a 15-year-old. Pull over. Let her out. I don't think
you're right. I didn't think about that. That
yeah.
That wouldn't stop them. As long as they got one of each eventually, I don't – yeah, that wouldn't stop them. Never mind.
That was their ultimate goal. But but her grandmother had dropped her off at a church event, and Bittaker and Norris were drunk, and they were partying, and they saw her. And no. Norris noticed her and said to Bittaker, "Hey, there's a cute blonde." So they pulled up to her and they asked her if she needed a ride. She said no. And then they asked if she wanted to get in and smoke some grass with them. Because that's what they called weed back in the 70s, grass.
Oh, yeah.
And she said no to that as well and kept walking. But these two clowns don't take no for an answer. They pulled up ahead of her. Then Norris got out of the van and opened the door, the sliding door, and pretended like he was working on it. Ching, 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 click, 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 click. There's no, I'm going to get this door right. I'm going to get it fixed there, Norris. I'm going to get it fixed. Yep. I'm going to, I mean, it was closed perfectly, but I just opened it, but I'm going to fix it.
Oh God! You know, like, how does this go? What goes through these people's mind? Anyway, never mind.
So, when she passed by the van, he grabbed her and dragged her into the van, and they took off. And Bittaker turned up the radio to drown out her cries, and they took off toward their fire road as Norris subdued Lucinda. Now, Lucinda, now this is just me speculating. I mean, I didn't look for any pictures of these victims, but Lucinda is a, that's a Latino name. And we remember Roy doesn't like Latinos. So Roy decided that he wanted to go first on this one. So Bittaker took a walk for a bit, and when he got back, they both took turns raping and torturing her for the rest of the night.
Oh, my.
She asked them if they were going to kill her, and they said no. She didn't believe them, and she asked if they would let her pray before they killed her, and they did not let her. They dragged her from the van and, huh?
I just said that, you know, she asked if she could pray and they said they didn't let her. I said, nice guys.
Yeah, nice guys.
You could have let her. I mean, shit. Anyway.
Well, it was about powers and domination and humiliation as much as it was about sex.
Well, yeah, you're right.
So they dragged her from the van, and Norris tried to strangle her, but he threw up. And Bittaker took over and strangled her, you know, strangled her by twisting a coat hanger around her neck with vice grips. Like, yeah. So once dead, they threw her into a canyon, and they just left her there. And Bittaker said that the animals would, quote, eat her up.
Yeah, that's a definite possibility.
So the police were called when Lucinda didn't come home, but there were no leads or witnesses, so the case went cold. On July 5th, 1979, they decided it was time for, you know, Murder Mac to take another road trip. This was just 2 weeks after they had killed Lucinda.
Well, moving right along.
Yeah. You know, it should be pointed out that most men, if they have a vehicle that they name, they usually name it a woman's name.
Yes, they do. You're right about that.
Mac? That's not a woman's name. Just random observation that I had.
Yeah. Well, what's her name? Mackenzie Phillips. It could be short for Mackenzie. It could be Mac. You know? I know. I'm stretching there, but.
You're stretching a lot because it's spelled M-C-K, not M-A-C-K.
I know. They call a lot of people like that have the last name like McDonald or whatever. They call them Mac all the time. So it could be. But it's not. I know.
Let me rag on these people.
It was
Let me rag on these people. Damn.
Yes, rag on them. I was just, like I said, it was a reach, but
hey.
Sorry. Not sorry.
Oh, God. Deep breath. Deep breath. You're not going to derail me on this episode. If anything, I'm going to get you. Payback for last week. Oh, wait, that wasn't last week. That was the previous week. Yeah, I still owe you, bitch.
Then you got me pretty good last week, I thought. No?
I don't remember. I'm thinking
something else. It don't matter.
I literally edited that episode like immediately after we were done with it, and I haven't touched it since. I'll listen to it tomorrow when I'm on my way down to Miami. So,
right on.
They spotted 18-year-old hitchhiker Andrea Hall, and they picked her up. And Norris was hiding under the bed so that she would think that Bittaker was traveling alone. Hall was one of the thousands of people who had came to the Midwest or came from the Midwest out to California to try for a better life. She was having a hard time over there, and I think she was from Ohio. She was having a hard time there, and she figured that she could do better in California. And she hitchhiked a lot, but she had no idea where she had just put herself by accepting a ride from these chuckleheads.
Yeah.
Bittaker, this is sadistic. Bittaker asked her if she wanted a drink, and she said yes, and he told her there was a cooler there in the back. So she went back there, and that's when Norris pounced, and she fought him, but he ultimately subdued her, tied her up, and taped her up. And they took her to their spot, and they raped her repeatedly. Or Bittaker raped her repeatedly, Norris only once. And no. the reason for this, he wasn't having like a moment of, you know, clarity or anything like that, or remorse or anything like that. He thought he saw head heights. Head heights.
Oh God. Oh, Jesus.
Head heights. He thought he saw headlights, so they drove deeper into the hills. Bittaker dragged Hall into the bushes while Norris drove to a store to get more liquor. He obviously wasn't too concerned about the head heights.
No, the head heights definitely weren't bothering him.
No.
The head heights.
But Bittaker wasn't finished. He wanted souvenirs, so he broke out the Polaroid camera and began shooting many shots of her. He forced her to perform oral sex on him, and he was taking pictures. He was telling her to scream and make it look good. He's also demanding that she give him reasons why he should let her live. So psychological torture on top of physical and rape and eventually murder. Nice guys, these fuckers.
Yeah. Yeah, real nice guys.
So.
But their parents are so proud.
Yeah. Well, no, they weren't.
They were both
disowned.
Yeah, I know. That's why it was.
Okay. And rightfully so. Bittaker told her that her reasons weren't good enough, so he jammed an ice pick into her ear, followed by the other one, in which he stomped on, and then he strangled her to death.
Because ice picks to both ears would have done the job.
She was still alive, but, you know, I mean.
Really? Because that always kills people in the movies.
Well, it makes you brain dead. I mean, you're going to die from it, but not immediately. It just makes you brain dead.
Oh, okay.
So he then threw her body off of a cliff near where he had dumped Lucinda Schaefer's body. Andrea Hall was also reported missing, and once again, there were no leads or no witnesses, and it seemed like they had come up with a foolproof scheme. And really, I mean, think about what I've said. It does seem like they came up with a foolproof scheme.
Yeah, it does.
Minus the head height.
Yeah, minus the head height. Look at head height.
But they laid low for about 2 months, letting things cool down for a bit, maybe because of the head heights.
Yeah, that would do it. That would make me want to lay low.
The head heights. But they decided that it was time to go hunting again, and this time they escalated. Their depravity escalated with each one, but this time they grabbed two girls instead of one. They thought that they were untouchable, and driving through Redondo Beach, they spotted 15-year-old Jackie Gilliam and 13-year-old Leah Lamp. And they were hitchhiking to the beach, and they pulled up to them asking if they needed a ride, and the girl said yes and happily got in. The girl started freaking out when Bittaker started driving the opposite direction from the beach, but He said he was going somewhere where they could smoke some grass.
Oh, back to smoking grass.
It just sounds so funny saying smoking grass nowadays, doesn't it? Grass.
I know, right?
I don't know why.
That was a thing back then.
Yeah, I mean, weed or pot. Yeah. It was the same thing as weed or pot, like nowadays. But
yeah.
He pulled into an abandoned park, and Norris had a sock full of BBs, and he hit Leah with it as hard as he could in the head and knocked her out. He then started trying to subdue Jackie, but she managed to get the door open, but Bittaker hit her hard in the head, knocking her back into the van. They weren't careful, and there were two people playing tennis who had heard the commotion, and they started walking toward the van. Bittaker told them that she was just having a bad acid trip and she would be okay. They then drove off to their killing place. Neither of them were interested in Leah because they thought she was overweight. They just wanted Jackie. They kept the two girls captive in the mountains for 2 whole days, but Bittaker had a new idea. Building on his souvenirs with the Polaroid, he brought out a tape recorder and recorded Jackie's rape and torture. Yeah, and he wanted it documented that he had raped a virgin because both of these girls were virgins. They told him that.
Wow. Oh, man. Dude, that's... Oh, God.
Yeah. So, you think that's sick? Buckle up.
Oh, I'm sure it gets worse. I was going to say, I'm sure it gets worse, but
yeah. Damn. But Norris had a fantasy that he wanted to explore.
Of course he did.
But Bittaker had told Jackie that she had to pretend to be enjoying the rape. But Norris told her to pretend that she was a cousin of his that he wanted. Oh, and
oh my. Oh no.
I'm guessing it might have been that 20-year-old when he was 16. That it doesn't say, but I'm guessing that that's who it was.
Yeah, probably.
So they then tied the girls up and gagged them, and they literally fell asleep next to them. The next morning, Bittaker forces 13-year-old Leah to strip, and the girls were begging for mercy. They forced Leah to pose in different sexual poses, and they photographed it with their professional Polaroid camera. And then... That's going to become a recurring thing that I make fun of, like camper van. Anytime
yes,
it comes up.
It's good.
But they then tied her up again, and then they went back to Jackie. And then they escalated their depravity with the tools. Bittaker stabbed Jackie's breast with a knife pick and then ripped part of her nipple off with pliers.
And, oh, ow.
Yeah, ow, very much ow. And then he pushed the ice pick into her ear and strangled her. For Leah, remember, she was the 13-year-old that they considered overweight. So they didn't deserve their freaking meat whistle. She wasn't worthy, but fuck off. Fuck off, guys. I mean, seriously.
Fucking sucks.
I'm glad I told you this was a rough one going into it. And I'm doing my best to kind of, you know, it's just like, I could go into the gory details and everything, but I think what I'm doing is enough. I really don't want
it. Definitely.
I really don't want a repeat of the fucking Satan episode.
No,
which could have happened if I had gone into like all. I'm giving you what you need.
Yeah.
Well, not really need, but I'm just
well,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's, I do. Anyway. Yeah. Wow.
I don't want another repeat of that Gertrude Baniszewski episode. That was so fucking rough. But
anyway, quick question.
Yeah. But for Leah, they forced her out of the van. They taunted her, saying that since she wanted to stay a virgin, she could die a virgin, and they both beat her to death with hammers.
Damn. Okay. Yeah.
You know, we keep saying the Mental Illness Theater is like the coolest podcast name. I think the most fitting podcast name for a true crime podcast would be Human Monsters.
Human Monsters, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just that, just saying.
Yeah.
I was a guest on that podcast about, I don't know, 8 months before we started CKCB. I was a guest on that podcast, but,
anyway.
Once again, both girls were reported missing and there were no leads and they were considered runaways, as they always are. They just ran away.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just ran away. 2 months later. On Halloween night, they went into a neighborhood and Bittaker spotted somebody that he knew. 18-year-old waitress Lynette Ledford. And this is their final known victim, but like I said earlier, I am positive there are more.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
But Lynette had been at a Halloween party with, and she had had a fight with her boyfriend who ditched her. And Bittaker, she knew Bittaker from, he was a regular at the restaurant that she worked at. And she also knew his van, Murder Mac. Although I don't think that she knew it as Murder Mac. I don't think she knew it as Murder Mac.
Yeah, but, I wouldn't think so.
He probably called it something like Sexy Chevy. Got him!
Oh, man. Yeah, you got me.
I didn't even have that written down. I just said it. So.
Yeah, you got me. Fuck. All right. Well done. Well played, sir. Well played.
She flagged them down, and they, of course, picked her up. But. Bittaker didn't want to drive
to their spot.
Yeah. But Bittaker didn't want to drive to their spot. And I'm assuming, because I'm assuming that, you know, I mean, you would think that if Bittaker was actually considered her a friend, that they wouldn't have done this. So what I'm thinking happened was, you know, like I said, he had been a regular at the restaurant that she worked at. What I'm thinking is, like, he was hitting on her and she was basically telling him, you know, just like, dude, chill. I got a boyfriend, or fuck off, or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and then that wounded his fragile ego and everything. And it's probably like walking out of there and out of the restaurant and everything and be like, one day, bitch. That's kind of the scenario that I'm picturing in my head. Because if he actually considered her a friend, I don't think he does this, you know?
Yeah,
but then again,
but
you never know.
Yeah. You don't know. I mean, yeah, I think you're right though. I think he got shot down and wanted revenge.
Yep.
Or whatever. You know what I mean?
So, Bittaker, they didn't want to drive out to their spot, so they decided they would rape and kill her on the move. like while the van was moving. Norris attacked her first, and they would take turns driving and torturing and raping her. They did this for several hours, never stopping other than to trade places. All the while, the tape recorder was running, and multiple tools were used on her. Oh. What is on that tape was very disturbing as she screams, as bit, you can hear Bittaker taunting her, telling her to scream louder. You can also hear Norris telling her to scream. He picks up a hammer and he breaks her arm with it, which is also picked up by the tape recorder. Bittaker insisted that Norris finish Lynette off, and finally he used the coat hanger and pliers method to kill her. And then they dumped her body on a random lawn to get the press's attention. So they wanted notoriety now. So the next morning, Lynette's body was found by a jogger who called the police. And upon examination, in addition to the evidence of sexual assault, she had died of strangulation. She had blunt force trauma to the face, head, breasts, and elbow. Take a breath. Her vagina and rectum had been torn because she had been violated in both with pliers. She had also been stabbed like completely through her hand. Like they just basically, you know, just like stabbed, you know, like right through the hand.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a killer and I'm never going to be one, but I just can't see them escalating the way that they did on these five different, six different instances to the level of depravity. There were more victims.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I mean, yeah, that's, I don't even know what to say. But yeah, there had to be more.
Mm-hmm. So later in court, that tape was played, and Bittaker said that it was just a recording. It was just a recording of a threesome that got a little rough.
A little rough. Oh my!
But at this point, the case was cold because there were no witnesses or leads. As normal with all of them. I mean, they're not on Norris and Bittaker. They had never been on the police's radar for any of this.
Yeah.
But these pukes who had seemingly been committing the perfect murder wound up doing themselves in because they got too cocky. They had a friend in the same prison where the two of them met, this guy named Joe Jackson. No, it's not. Although it might have been, he had a song, Got the Time.
Yeah.
Maybe he was doing time when he wrote it? Nah. Yeah. Anthrax's cover of that is incredible.
I know. That's the only version I know. I don't ever think I've even heard the original.
I've heard it a couple of times. It's not that different. Anthrax didn't really do much
I'm going to have to look it up.
Other than they modernized it with the sound, you know, made it heavier. There's really not much difference, but, but anyway, they told this guy what they had been doing. You know, because he had gotten released from prison as well, and he had reconnected with the two of them. But they told this guy what they had been doing, and it didn't sit well with him because Joe had two daughters. And Joe, you know, they had like come over and done barbecues and stuff like that, hanging out and everything. And Joe thought that Bittaker was showing an unnatural interest in both of his teenage daughters. So he went to his attorney and told him what was going on and that he wanted to help put a stop to it. So Joe and his attorney, they went to the police, and Joe recited everything that Bittaker had told him, along with the fact that Bittaker was fixating on his own daughters, or on Joe's daughters.
Yeah, row, Reggie.
So Joe also mentions the van, which rung a bell with the police, because a woman had reported being kidnapped and raped by two men in a silver GMC van.
They're getting closer.
Yep. They. Oh, and by the way, GMC and Chevy are the same thing. It's like a Mercury is still a Ford. Yeah. A Lincoln is still a Ford. Same thing with GMC and Chevy. So,
yep.
Just putting that out there, because those branches don't really exist. And Mercury doesn't exist anymore. I don't think GMC as a brand for a vehicle doesn't exist anymore. Although GMC is the parent company for Chevy. It's just Chevy now. So.
No, GMC makes stuff still. Doesn't GMC make the Denali?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. My bad. They also make, I think GMC also still makes a line of like the higher grade pickup trucks, now that I think about it.
Yeah. It's all good.
But you don't see vans anymore. I mean, you see these like the Ford Transit now. They look like the freaking Jawa's freaking, you know, tank thing that they had in Star Wars. That's what those things remind me of.
Right.
You don't have the.
Yeah, they don't really make
the vans anymore.
Much anymore. It's all like sport utility shit like that.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why, because those older vans and everything. I mean, it's just you couldn't beat that for moving shit around, Dan. And these new trans, they're not as wide. They're not as wide as the vans.
No, they're tall and skinny.
Yeah, I know.
It's like they would like flip over, you'd think. But anyway.
Yeah, you would think like, anyway, hashtag, but I digress.
We kind of went off there for a little bit. We got off the rails.
Yeah. So the police brought this woman back in. They showed her pictures of Norris and Bittaker in a photo lineup. And she pointed both of them out immediately.
Oh, really? She's right out. All right.
Yeah.
Now it's getting good.
It was like 20 pictures. Not him and him. Suki, Suki.
All right. Suki, Suki. Shit, yeah, let's go.
So police, they didn't know where Bittaker was, but they had located Norris and put him under surveillance. And they caught him dealing marijuana, or grass, which because he was a convicted felon, that was a parole violation.
Uh-huh.
So he's arrested, and the police search his car, and they found photos of young women. He said that he never hurt them. Yeah, he was a photographer, of course, a high-priced, well-known photographer, the pride of Polaroid.
The pride of Polaroid.
Got him again.
Got me again. Oh, the pride of Polaroid. That's a t-shirt.
The pride of Polaroid.
Actually, it won't be a t-shirt. I can see that getting us into trouble.
Yeah, right.
Anyway.
I don't know what it is. I had to use a freaking bottle opener on these Bud Lights because they ain't being twisty off.
They ain't being twisty off?
No.
I hate it when that happens. Mm-hmm.
But I have a powder blue dolphins.
Hell yeah.
Bottle opener.
I got I've got this. Where's the camera? It's a multi-tool.
Why do you need a corkscrew when you're drinking out of your sippy cup?
Well, when I was drinking those, the Angry Orchard the other time, they're not twist offs; they're bottle openers. That's how the lip of the bottle broke off.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And from time to time, I do drink wine, so the corkscrew comes in handy.
Yeah, I don't drink wine. Oh man, Hangover City.
I don't do it a lot, but every once and again, I like some wine.
I don't dislike the taste of wine. I just dislike how I feel the next morning if I drink wine. So,
yeah, I like wine because it's a different buzz. It's a totally different.
Yeah, it definitely is.
I guess we should call it that.
Yeah. So Bittaker calls.
But anyway. Norris.
Yeah, Bittaker calls Norris, and a cop who was at Norris's house answers the phone, pretending to be a friend of Norris, saying that Norris had stepped out. I'm going to read that again because that's kind of a mouthful.
Yeah, Bittaker, that's a lot to digest.
Yeah. Bittaker calls Norris, and a cop who was at Norris's house answered the phone, pretending to be a friend of Norris because they had already arrested Norris at this point. So, I think, hold on. Yeah, they arrested him for the parole violation of, because he was dealing, he was dealing grass.
Dealing grass.
So,
that just sounds so funny.
Yeah. So Bittaker calls Norris, and a cop who was up, they were basically in his house waiting for Bittaker to call. So a cop who was there at, he answers the phone pretending to be a friend of Norris, saying that Norris has stepped out. But Bittaker realized that it's a trap.
It's a trap. Yeah, that's great.
So he went and buried his torture tapes, and then he went back to his hotel. But police had traced the call, and they were waiting for him at his hotel when he got back, and he was arrested for the rape of the woman who had luckily survived. At first, Bittaker was cooperative, and he started going through the photos that he had, which all seemed innocent. Innocent enough. Next time I trip up, you go one, two.
Start counting off.
Yeah.
All right.
It's going to be four every time. So at first, Bittaker was cooperative. He started going through the photos that he had, all of which seemed innocent enough. I mean, Bittaker and Norris both said that they had no clue about the missing girls. And of course, he had gotten rid of all the crazy shit because he just buried it. So basically, the pictures that he had were just pictures of them hanging out with girls and stuff like that. But when they searched the murder Mac, they found photos of women in distress along with jewelry from victims, a list of police broadcasting frequencies, along with the torture tape of Lynette Ledford, which Bittaker had misplaced. It had like fallen down like behind the bed or something like that.
All right. You think that's something you would like go out of your way to find?
No shit. Everybody who had heard the tape said that it was the most horrific thing that they had ever heard. Now, I have not heard this tape and I don't want to hear it. But, when you think of like beheading videos that came out from like Al Qaeda of like, journalists like Nick Berg or whatever, I remember seeing that and that stuck with me for a long time. They sawed that man's head off with a freaking dull knife.
Yep.
But
I remember seeing a video on Facebook that was somebody cutting a girl's head off, like, in the exact same way. And I'm watching it going, dude, this has to be fake. Because that girl's just sitting there letting this happen. There was, he was sawing for a while. So, I mean, she wasn't, there was no evidence of pain.
She was drugged.
Well, yeah.
It was probably a cartel. Right. It was probably a cartel video. But, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
But that shit.
But yeah, it was very disturbing.
Yeah, but this was just audio. And, you know, and I don't, you know, like, I'm sure that you can find that audio out there if you want to. I don't want to hear it.
No, not at all.
But like the video that you were talking about that you saw, like Nick Berg, that journalist that got killed, that got beheaded. There wasn't really any audio of that other than the terrorist, you know, like screaming in Arabic or whatever and everything. Yeah. But Nick Berg had been drugged, similar to the video that you saw. But this, you know, Lynette Ledford in this audio tape, she wasn't drugged. You know, and I mean, she might have smoked a little grass, but. Actually, no, she didn't. No, she didn't. They pounced on her like immediately.
Didn't give her a chance to smoke any grass.
Yeah, but yeah, I definitely don't want to hear that audio. But we're gonna come back to that audio. We're gonna come back to that audio shortly. So, investigators go after Norris, offering a plea deal. Plead guilty and testify against Bittaker, and the death sentence is off the table. And he confesses to his involvement, although it's mainly him blaming Bittaker completely. He was just there following Bittaker's lead. Of course. That's what they all say when they turn on each other.
Yeah, right? That wasn't me. It was all him. I was just there.
Unless it's Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole.
Well, okay. That's a different story. Yeah.
but in the end, both men are charged with 5 counts of murder, robbery, kidnapping, forcible rape, sexual perversion, and criminal conspiracy. Roy Norris had led the police to the locations of the dumped bodies as a condition of his plea deal. They found Jackie and Leah's bodies, but they didn't find Lucinda or Andrea Hall. Yeah.
Okay.
The mountains of California. Bittaker was right. The animals got her. Got them.
Yeah, they probably did, no doubt.
On January 18th of 1981, Bittaker goes on trial. Psychologists diagnose both men as having antisocial personalities who treat other human beings as objects. Bittaker, of course, claimed innocence and later wrote 2 studies on his own psyche.
he did it. Oh my, okay.
I mean, it's the typical, I didn't put anything in the notes and everything because you know what it is. It's just him blaming his, you know, mom, daddy wasn't there, take me to the fair, you know, and like I said earlier.
Yeah.
That's all it was. He's blaming everybody but himself. You know, for the way he was, but he didn't kill those women.
No, of course not.
But what really did them in was the tape. The audio tape. The cassette.
Yep.
It was played in court. And jury members and attorneys, and even attorneys ran out of the courtroom sick to their stomachs, crying, and horrified. One attorney said that if you ever wondered what hell was like, that tape was it. Lynette Ledford had died in hell at the hands of the devil.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't want to hear it. I do not want to hear it. But that tape is still to this day used in FBI training to desensitize new agents to the horrors of the job.
Wow. Wow. Oh my God.
I mean, if the FBI uses it as Exhibit A in training for rookie FBI agents, you know it's bad.
Yeah. God damn. All right. Well, fuck.
February 17th.
Dude, I don't even know what to say to
that. I know. Yeah, this is... Anyway. As far as serial killers go, this is one of the worst. Even though they don't have the body count of people like Bundy or Gacy or anything like that. They don't have that body count, but still, it's just they... Yeah, they made their own infamy.
They did terrible things, sure.
Yeah. Ugh. So February 17, 1981, Bittaker is found guilty and he's sentenced to death. A month later, Norris pleads guilty and gets 45 years to life. Bittaker would take letters, you know, prison tender type shit. And yeah, I mean, nobody hooked up with Bittaker, but he still had a fan club. So he would take letters and he would show no remorse in what the correspondence that he was writing back and forth to these people. People would write him and he would sign his correspondence as his nickname, Pliers. He died on December 13th, 2019 in San Quentin on death row of natural causes. And, you know, the more we get into this and everything, the more we cover these and you have people sentenced to death and they wind up dying years later under natural causes, there is a little bit of poetic justice to that because of the fact that they don't know when their death is going to be. So it's just like they're sitting there, I'm going to die, just don't know when. They're going to kill me, just don't know when. So,
yeah,
right up to the point to where they either get executed or whether they die of natural causes, like what happens in a lot of these cases, they're wondering, could every morning when they wake up, could this be the day?
Yeah, yeah.
So you know what?
I'll go with you on that. Yeah, that's. I mean, I always think it's like, dude, he was sentenced to death. Put him down. Don't let him live out. Don't let him live a full life waiting for appeals on the taxpayers' money in prison. Right. Just put him down. But when you put it that way, yeah, okay. Because he doesn't know when it's going to happen.
Right.
Just like their victim. That's right, exactly. Perfect. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah, that's something that just dawned on me as I was writing this episode. I'm like, you know what? They don't know. So, yeah. In a way, if one of these pukes dies, you know, on death row, dies of natural causes, then that means that every single frickin' day they woke up wondering if today was going to be the day. And you know what? There's something very satisfying about that.
Yes.
You know?
And there totally is. 100% right. All right.
So, hey, and you know what? Some of the perks, you know, some of the added benefits about being, about being a true crime podcaster, because I never would have come up with this.
Yeah, right.
You know, I always thought it's like, why do we let these people sit on death row for 20, 30 years? It's psychological torture and they deserve every fucking bit of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Like BTK.
You've totally changed my mind about that.
Yeah, my mind was recently changed. But BTK, he's going to die in prison and he knows that. He doesn't have to wake up every morning saying, could today be the day? Because he was sentenced to life in prison, so yep. So he doesn't get that. Although he fucking deserves it.
That's true. Anyway.
Anyway. Hashtag I digress, but not really. So Roy Norris died February 24th of 2020 at California Medical Facility in Vacaville, California, also of natural causes. I hope he got COVID. I hope he died of COVID. But
I'm sure he did. Whether he did or not, I'm sure he did.
Yeah. Oh shit. Yeah. I picked up what you were throwing down. But
I figured.
The California Medical Facility in Vacaville, California, that's also the facility where Ed Kemper is being held to this day.
Oh.
So that's it. That's all I got.
All right.
That was
intense, but thank you for making it not more intense than it needed to be.
Yeah, I learned my lesson after the Gertrude Satan episode. I mean, I'm not going to do that again. Yeah. I'm really not going to do that again. That was rough. But thanks for listening, everybody. We appreciate the hell out of it. And, and, you know, follow us on the socials and everything, rate, review, interact with us, and we'll give you a shout out and everything. And, but if that goes to everybody, we're not just going to shout out the people that tell us that say cool things about us. Everybody, as he found out last week. So, but seriously, you know, we love doing this. We love the fact that you are listening and everything. We're growing podcast, but damn, we want to interact with you on social media. We want to have fun and all that stuff. I go on like, you know, social media of like other podcasts and everything, and they've got like people talking back and forth about the episodes and stuff like that. I want that for us. And you know what? Some of these podcasts that have all this like superior, you know, like serious interaction, the host doesn't even get into it. It's just there.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to be there. y'all start getting that shit going on our socials. We're going to be there like shooting the shit with you.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So anyway, until next week, later.
Cheers, everybody. Oh, hey, if you made it to this part of the video, thanks for hanging out with us this whole time. And please like, subscribe, share if you like it. Anyway, we'll see you later, everybody.
Cheers, everybody.